Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. Yes, it's Friday, and you thought I was going to say good Monday morning, but I got you on that one. All right, this is Steve Graddick. I'm delighted to be your host this morning. We've got a special show this morning. Our guest in studio is the Honorable Jason Swindle, Sr., who's a local criminal defense attorney. He got his undergraduate from Georgia Southern University, Go Eagles, and his Juris Doctor's JD from Walter F. George School of Law, Mercer University. So he's spent some time in Middle and South Georgia. He's got numerous honors and numerous memberships. Just to give you a flavor for the memberships, Carroll County Bar Association, Carroll County Chamber, Sexual Offender Registration Review Board, National College of DUI Defense, which is, I think, an important part of your practice, West Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, et cetera, the Federalist Society, State Bar of Georgia, Criminal Law Section, and National Rifle Association. Good morning, Jason.
Steve, good morning to you.
Thank you for coming in. What prompted my invitation was post-pandemic, if I can say that, just like, you know, reminiscent of 9-1-1, whenever we have these type of horrible crises in our country, it seems like we have an attempt by some in government, be it state or local or certainly federal, to do an overreach, to gain power and control in areas that they probably shouldn't. And with that comes the inevitable discussion of civil liberties and what are our rights, where do they end, where does governments begin, if you want to phrase it that way. And it just struck me this go-around after, you know, in 9/11 we had the FISA court, we had Patriot Act, and, of course, the creation of Homeland Security Department and all of those things. And, you know, we're still living 20 years later the repercussions of those TSA, et cetera, many things. And so now with this pandemic, and we talk about contact tracing. We talk about government telling us we cannot go to church or a local retailer cannot open up, but Wally World can. And so brings up the discussion of what are our freedoms, what are our civil liberties, what are our rights. So I'd like to get a real good education from you this morning. And I think there's no better place to start than the Declaration of Independence and the phrase unalienable rights. What really are they? And they list three, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, but are there more than that?
Well, they actually are more than that. Unalienable rights are simply this, the rights that cannot be taken away by man. They're similar to something that Clarence Thomas often talks about, and that is a natural law. We were born. We have certain rights as human beings that man cannot give us. Only God can. And that's actually talked about in the Declaration of Independence. The pursuit of happiness, for instance. We don't have a right to be happy. We do have a right to pursue that. And so both natural law and the Constitution provide us rights to do things, but more importantly, the Constitution limits what the government can do to us. And so that's why a lot of people are speaking about this now, because we're being told to wear masks. We're being told to be 6 feet away from each other. During times like this, or 9/11, which 9/11 was a lot of legislation that was criticized, here we're dealing with executive orders because this is considered to be an emergency, which it is.
Right.
And the Constitution does provide the federal government with the ability to take measures when we have a crisis like this, or a war, to curtail our rights in a temporary manner, which we always have to look out for politicians who say they're going to take more power temporarily because it barely comes back. But, you know, here the president is taking advice from a number of people, particularly the CDC, and he's taking all the right steps, in my opinion. I, like everybody else, just wants this to be over with as quick as possible.
Well, let's say on unalienable rights, and you mentioned in your answer there that the rights come from God. So in an atheistic society like the communist China, if they deny the existence of a God, then all rights come from government.
Correct.
And if they come from government, then government can decide they want to restrain, remove, or change those so-called rights.
They can do anything they want to. And China has done that. Now, over the years, there have been reforms where the citizens have been given more rights. But back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, China was very much like the Soviet Union in that there was no tolerance for religion, and all of the rights came from the government.
And I would contend any new rights were born by the fact that they just have a desire for economic development in certain provinces.
Oh, yes.
And
that's correct. That's the motive.
Let's let's shift, because you know there may be subtleties here, and I'm not aware of them. But the term civil liberties, how is that different, and what is a good definition of that?
Well, actually, civil liberties are a form of an unalienable right. Now, the difference is that civil liberties here in the United States are not only provided by God, but the Constitution protects all of those rights, particularly the ones, well, the Bill of Rights is probably the most important set of amendments in the Constitution that is protected, needs to be protected, but civil liberties are the right to, well, actually, the First Amendment gives us a lot of them, mm-hmm. the right to assemble,
Five.
The right to free mm-hmm. press, the right to speak, et mm-hmm. cetera, et cetera. So really, the unalienable rights and civil liberties sort of go hand in hand.
Okay, all right. In unalienable rights, we're given life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. What others? I mean, I would assume self-defense would be an unalienable right?
Well, I would say it would be, yes. That's something that, again, comes from God. God didn't make us to not protect ourselves from danger and other people. And over the years, the legislators, governors, and the president have pushed forward the idea that you can protect yourself. And each state has different statutes regarding, mm-hmm. you know, the castle doctrine. Do you have to back up before you protect yourself and that sort of thing? But that is a natural right, and it's also codified in statutes and actually in the Constitution of some of the states.
I think in the first draft of the Declaration, instead of pursuit of happiness, private property was in that first draft, and it was changed to pursuit of happiness. The private property, I mean, obviously in a communist society, you don't have a right to private property, but capitalistic society or free society, you do.
Yes.
Correct?
You do.
Okay. You mentioned the Bill of Rights. Incredibly important and very controversial, I think, when the Constitution was being drafted and initiated. How, in your opinion, how has that clarified our freedoms as Americans?
I think it's been significant in clarifying our freedoms. As you know, the framers came from England mm-hmm. and colonized the eastern part of the United States. They were abused. Their homes were ransacked by the king. People were executed without a trial. And those horrors were so bad that Thomas Jefferson drafted the Declaration of Independence, which really was a declaration of war. And thank God we won that war. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be here today.
Our guest this morning is Jason Swindle. He's a criminal defense attorney, and we're going to come back and we're going to jump a little more closely into his daily work when we talk about the six pillars of the Bill of Rights as it relates to the criminal justice system. But we'll be back with more after this word from Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
As we journey through this global pandemic together, Oak Mountain Academy is lifting everyone in prayer and holding the community in our hearts. We continue to pray for all of the families directly impacted and the first responders and medical personnel on the front lines. There are so many individuals working around the clock to keep us safe and healthy. I'm Patrick Uran, headmaster, asking you to join all of us on the mountain in prayer and gratitude for everyone in our community. For more information about the Academy, visit us at oakmountain.us.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. Strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong. That's Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong.
Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. Justin Timberlake, I'm here. We've got Jason Swindle, senior. He's in studio, and we're talking about the civil liberties, and he's a criminal defense attorney, and we mentioned about the six pillars of the Bill of Rights. Let me list them, and we'll try to, for the sake of time, we may have to go a little bit quickly through them all, but due process, double jeopardy, self-incrimination, search and seizure, speedy trial, and excessive, although I put executive bail. I don't know what that means when I excessive bail. We'll delve into that later. But due process, top of the list. We're all guaranteed the right of due process, right?
That is correct.
Okay. What is due process?
Well, you've got substantive due process and you've got procedural due process.
News to me. Okay.
Procedural due process is ensuring that, for instance, if somebody's arrested, that they have the right to an attorney. They have a right to a trial. They have a right to these procedures. Okay. Substantive due process is a little bit different in that it's much more broader. If somebody has, for instance, been convicted of a crime and they would like to appeal that case, if they're not allowed to do that, they're denied their substantive due process rights. And so the due process clause itself says that it protects people, property, and there's one other. I just
couldn't think. Come to you, but
life, liberty, and property.
Property.
Sorry.
So this is a constitutional guarantee, and substantive or procedural. And I guess at this point, this is why, in so many times, we need attorneys. We need an advocate for us to be sure that our rights are upheld.
Absolutely. Many people joke about criminal defense lawyers, and I've learned how to take those jokes over the years, and some of them are pretty funny. But it's not funny when somebody gets arrested, and the minute that you have somebody who perhaps jokes around about criminal defense attorneys or doesn't like them, if their son gets arrested, then it's the police's fault, and the criminal defense attorney is supposed to come in and, you know, take the case and put forward the facts from that.
Let me ask you this question. This is a kind of a hard question, but I think it's reasonably attached to your answer there. I've often wondered, and I think we all do at one time or another, about a criminal defense attorney who takes a client who is, if not only perceived, but it's pretty well understood that that client is guilty. Or the client has been charged with this horrific crime. And you wonder, how can that attorney, you know, I like the attorney, seems to be qualified, you know, good old boy, good old gal. But how can they possibly defend this lowlife? And what's your thought process how do you approach a situation like that?
Well, I appreciate that question. That's one of my favorites, and I've addressed that a number of times over the years. Number one, we're all presumed to be innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm a huge believer in the Constitution. When I take a case, my job is not to, quote, get a guilty person off the hook. That's not my job. My job is to represent that person to the best of my ability. And by doing so, I have to go through the evidence, speak with witnesses, and finally assess the strength of the case, of the state's case. There's a lot of negotiation that goes on. There are a lot of motions that are filed. But in the end, only about 1% of criminal cases in Carroll County even go to trial. So these rights are extremely important. And we use these rights during the negotiation process, the motion process, and that sort of thing. But when it comes to using them in a jury trial, that's sort of rare for our county. Now, other counties have more trials. Douglas County has a lot, Coweta, but while these rights are extremely important, I'm also not the person who judges whether or not my client's guilty.
Mm.
That's not part of my job. That's the jury's job, maybe the judge's job. My job is to make sure these rights are protected, because if you do not protect what you said, quote, a low-life person or somebody who may be guilty, then who are you going to protect? Who's good enough? Where's the standard? Because if that person doesn't have the rights that we talked about, you and I don't have them either.
I can see that we're going to have time issues today, because I've got... But before we move on to double jeopardy, let me ask you this. I don't want to not ask this and let the program get away from us, because this has been a debate in recent years, you know, with the emergence of political correctness and the emergence of the agenda-driven national media. The concept that we are innocent until proven guilty, I would think that would be a bedrock of our rights. And how does that fit into what we're discussing?
Well, when I try cases and I talk to the jury about the fact that my client is innocent until proven guilty, I normally do that in my opening statement, because when you have a defendant walk in the courtroom, it's natural for the entire jury to look at that person and think, quote, what did he do?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the presumption of innocence is like a cloak that you wear. And when you're in trial, you have that cloak on. And the only way you can lose that cloak is for the state to introduce enough evidence to find your client guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, which is an extremely high standard. It's the highest burden of proof in the world, and it should be. because our founders did not want innocent people being convicted of crimes. They'd seen that enough.
Very profound and very important, and we're going to tackle the remaining five pillars of the Bill of Rights, we hope, in the last segment of the program. But first, this word from our sponsors.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. Strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org, hashtag WeAreTannerStrong. That's Tanner.org, hashtag WeAreTannerStrong.
As we journey through this global pandemic together, Oak Mountain Academy is lifting everyone in prayer and holding the community in our hearts. We continue to pray for all of the families directly impacted and the first responders and medical personnel on the front lines. There are so many individuals working around the clock to keep us safe and healthy. I'm Patrick Uran, headmaster, asking you to join all of us on the mountain in prayer and gratitude for everyone in our community. For more information about the Academy, visit us at oakmountain.us.
Best bumper music anywhere. You got the community voice. I'm Steve Gradick, your host. And we're honored to have in studio Jason Swindle Sr. And we're talking about unalienable rights, civil liberties, the Bill of Rights. And we're going through the six pillars of the Bill of Rights. Not real quickly, but we're trying to go through them. The next one is Double Jeopardy, which is not a game show. So what is Double Jeopardy?
There are many aspects to Double Jeopardy. We would be here for a long time discussing that concept and protection within the Constitution. What it basically means is this, and I'm going to quote this from the Fifth Amendment of the United States. No person shall be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. All that means is, you can't be tried twice for the same crime. But there's an asterisk, and I'll tell you in a second. In general, this means that when a person is charged with a crime and pleads not guilty, goes to trial, and is acquitted, he cannot be prosecuted again. Now, there are plenty of exceptions to this, okay? One of them is what's called a hung jury. As you know, a verdict has to be unanimous, and if it is 11 to 1, it's a mistrial. Neither side wins, although the defense probably wins more because their client wasn't convicted. So, but the state can try that case all over again, even though it seems that seems like the defendant has been through jeopardy through a trial. Under those circumstances, the double jeopardy clause does not at all apply, and the case can be tried again. And I've had cases where I've tried it three times.
Well, I'm going to expose my ignorance. Elaborate. It has to be a unanimous decision. On part
yes,
of the jury.
On criminal cases.
On criminal cases.
Correct.
Okay, but not on civil. But now we've got this new, I mean, I don't know if this is a new phenomenon. Like with OJ, you can be acquitted in criminal court, but then you can still be sued in civil court.
Absolutely.
I mean, what is that recent, or has that always been the case?
It's always been the case. The reason you don't see it often is that most defendants don't have the money that OJ Simpson had. So if you're going to sue somebody who doesn't have much money, you're just going to waste money on attorney's fees and not get the recovery that you would want.
Okay, let's move on to the next pillar, which I think is important. I would assume this would be kind of the Fifth Amendment one, but is self-incrimination.
Right.
I would assume that's pretty important when it comes to being a criminal defense attorney.
It is highly important, and I'll tell you why. In a trial setting, one of the biggest issues is, do I put my client on the stand? Now, I don't like to put my client on the stand, particularly if the trial is going well for us, because a skilled prosecutor can rip somebody to pieces on the stand. But by the time I get to trial, I will know whether or not that defendant client has a capacity to withstand that sort of cross-examination. Just to give you an example, the past two trials I've had, one client was great, calm, did not get flustered, and we got an acquittal on that case. I think it had a lot to do with his testimony. The next case, where the evidence was much more damning, and the state had a great case, I did not put my client up on the stand because I knew he would talk and talk and talk and unravel everything that the defense team had done just in maybe two sentences. So it's a real risk putting your client up there. That's why the Fifth Amendment is so important, because he has a right not to testify. But I have found jurors desperately want to hear from defendants when they're charged. But it's a real tricky call sometimes.
Search and seizure. This is, you know, when I think of that, you know, we talk about warrants, we talk about no knock warrants, and we've only got a couple minutes left, but give us a overview of search and seizures and our rights as protected by the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, the Fourth Amendment protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures, illegal detentions, and illegal arrests. Some common situations that trigger these protections would be when an officer stops somebody who they suspect is involved in a crime or a traffic violation, search warrants for homes, blood, search warrants for vehicles. You know, in general, the Constitution and the framers preferred that there be a warrant for any type search. But now we have so many exceptions and so many warrantless searches that have developed over the years that there are a number of ways for law enforcement to get what they want, even without a search warrant.
You know, I almost would like to do a whole program on that, because that to me tends to confuse me more than anything, is when is a warrant needed, or how does an individual respond when law enforcement says, can I, et cetera, can I, you know, do this, and, you know.
I'd love to talk about that.
I think we could do a whole program on that. Well, unfortunately, now we've got two more, but we're not going to have time to jump into them. As we wrap it up and move on out, what recommendation would you give to the average American in less than a minute as to how to become educated and to know what our rights are under the Constitution?
I think the easiest thing to do would be Google the Bill of Rights.
Just read it.
Just read it. Mm-hmm. It's very short. there are a number of opinions about each one. Some are controversial. But a simple Google search will get you started.
And I would suggest also read the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly.
For the heart and soul of
America.
And
read the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Which is not that long either.
Jason Swindle, thank you, sir. Hopefully we can have you back soon. And thank you for listening to the Community Voice here on WLBB Carrollton.